Instantly acoustic, a home for unamplified music. Not plugged in, mic'd up, nor now, that's what it's totally about and why it's called Totally Acoustic.
The first thing I'm going to do is a song I wrote about 3 weeks ago for a play. And it's about, so it's most basically the way I write songs is people in pubs say things to me, I disagree, and then rather than being brave enough to say so at the time, I go home and a week later write a song about it. So this is all about lots of people going, yes, thank you. This is all about basically lots of people going, oh, we don't like hipsters. And basically, so my brother-in-law was saying this, wasn't I? My brother-in-law was saying, I love hipsters. Hipsters are great. It's just young people having fun. Which is true. So this song, which I've written down here, is called I Am a Hipster. I like to ride around on a bike with fixed gears. I like to go to secret gigs and drink craft beers. Ask me and our owner to be enjoying an artisanal cronut. Instagram that flat white mister. I am a hipster. I've got a ukulele and a pop-up shop in Hackney, selling ukuleles to millionaires with acne. You can criticise my clothes and music if you've never, ever, ever looked stupid. I've seen those Facebook pictures. You were a hipster. You say we've changed your high streets, but when did you last go? At least there's people in the pub. Now it's gone gastro. Before we turned up, you had got £14 lands and a docking shot. Now we've got a framer and a cocktail mixer. Thank fuck for hipsters. Mosh and rockers, punks and goths, we're in a proud tradition of young people who just want to look a little bit different. What's that, Grandpa? In your day, there was nothing daft about an acid rave. Well, twist my melon, you melon twister. You were a hipster. Let he or she who never owned a Rennie hat cast the first stone. Emo brothers and sugar bowl sisters, we are all hipsters. We are all hipsters. We are all hipsters. This is about becoming friends in midlife. You know, when you make friends now, and you make friends now is difficult because you sort of think, oh, it's a bit of a commitment, and I've sort of got enough friends who are, present company accepted, annoying enough as it is. So this song is called Can We Be Friends? I only came here because I thought I ought to. Standing at the bar, no one I knew to talk to. Said hello to you because we met at that thing last year. 20 minutes later, we're still stood here. We only talked for 2 ticks, but something clicks. Hey, can we be friends? Sorry if it seems like I'm not making sense, but this is not a thing I thought would happen again, that I'd say, hey, can we be friends? If we were teenagers, we could join a gang. If we were in our 20s, we could form a band. If we were in our 30s, there'd be pims in marquees. I think I've seen the point of dinner parties. I don't want to sound weird, but do you fancy a beer? Hey, can we be friends? Sorry if it seems like I'm not making sense, but this is not a thing I thought would happen again. And I'd say, hey, can we be friends? This is awkward, I know. The last time that it happened was a decade ago. But it feels like at our age you lose more people than you gain. So I say, hey, can we be friends? Sorry if it seems like I'm not making sense, but this is not a thing I thought would happen again. And I'd say, hey, can we be friends?
brilliant. So that's the end of me. Hurrah.
So now I'd like to welcome Sager. He's played Tony Acuci before and was amazing. It's somebody I'm very proud to know, very proud to introduce. Please welcome the marvellous Mr. Ben Moore.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
I'm Ben Moore. I don't do music, but I do sort of one-man comedy shows. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to do a little bit of a work in progress, starting with a bit from Who Here's Lost. Some of the best lies my mother told me were towards the end, when calling her out on them would have been painful and pointless. She told me all her money came from having created the most famous superhero ever, Drinking Fountainhead Man, a man whose head was a drinking fountain and whose power was to shoot, quite weakly, a stream of cold water at his rivals. She spoke long into the night of her life as a stowaway on HMS Malice, the Royal Navy's crudest ship, which would burn well-beloved objects to fuel its high seas rancour. And there was her PhD unifying the world of Shakespeare's tragedies into one internally consistent universe. This one was related to me after an afternoon we'd had in the pub, playing the King Lear pinball table. Yes, blinded Gloucester. Yes, blow winds and crack your cheeks. Rage, blow, multi-ball. During a walk to my aunt's place, a house aired with sherry and ointments. There were others there that afternoon. It was like a complaint date for OAPs. Their children would drop them off and they could tell each other about recent ailments, interesting new chagrins, half-remembered pasts. But this isn't about my mother. It's about the mother of others. I'm currently living a brownfield life. Not exactly busy, full of potential, possibly with subsurface contaminants. My artistic career has recently hit a bump and careered off the road. I made my name with a series of paintings called The Rhyming Bears. The first featured simply a pair of bears and rhyme. Next, they were on chairs, also rhymed, you see. In the third painting, the pair of bears on chairs were on stairs. Some people may have thought I'd go where to go from there. How wrong. The pair of bear on chairs on stairs, they had pairs. They next wore flares, and I had more ideas. In the following one, they said prayers. In the next, they were joined by a pair of hares. And then I ran out of ideas. Not a thing. Since then, I painted still lives of vases of flowers and various mid-transformation werewolves, no rhyme found, none intended, and a series featuring bipolar radiologists holding chipped teacups, very niche to a commission. My girlfriend is working on a production of The Fields of Love, which, if you're in the theatre business, you wouldn't find surprising. Everyone always is, to some greater or lesser extent. The story concerns a production of a play, about the production of a play, about an area outside of town called the Field of Love. In the play that everyone's acting in, or reviewing, or setting up for, or studying, there are layers in this thing. A field on the hill above the town, it has various names in various different scenes, is a place for love scenes. In the spring, young lovers meet and blossom wistfully with one another. In the summer, families and established marriages picnic and play. In the autumn, it's the location of breakups and misty mulls. And in the winter, old people wander and either reminisce or make new couples. But around that, you have the character of the girl who's rehearsing her part in the spring that turns out to be the flashback of a woman about to head up to the field with her husband. You have the critics who are commenting on a performance of the play, whose conversation becomes the entertainment being enjoyed by a set of old friends in the autumn field. There's an old woman who's making a dress for the ghost of her dead lover, who's watching auditions for the roles of the critics who are reviewing the essay written by the girl who is studying the play at school, which is now being built on the site of the field. The Fields of Love takes 3.5 hours to perform, and a lifetime to actually understand. Each subsequent version tends to add a layer of referentiality. There is now the tradition that the music student and the ballerina should never have met before the first performance and should fall in love for real over the rug. At the turn of the century, the scenery painter became the video artist, and so on. It may be ready to go in a year or so. So I rarely see her at the moment. It's a big project, a labour of literal love. But today we make time for each other. In the morning, we happy our heads off with brunch at I Could Eat, the cafe for the non-committal. We meander past branches of quirky and undateable, the women's shop that sells ukuleles, flowery dresses and big-framed sunglasses, and weird and solitary, the men's shop that sells black T-shirts, comic books and thick-framed glasses. We spend the afternoon at the Display Cabinet Museum. Some of the cabinets contained smaller cabinets. Others were for display only. Leaving the tube station she had upgraded on the escalator, we argued about her friend, Stuart Winnin, who I said I'd found generally. Generally what, she'd asked. No, I explained, I mean, he likes giving orders. We were going to get her a box set tonight of eggs. But we liked to have a dessert first. We both youngstered through broken homes, so we had a bowl of ice cream each. If to a man with a hammer, every problem looks like a nail, to a man with a spoon, every problem looks like ice cream. It was a good day. Our last good one for a while. Because although we went through life with spoons, our big problem was time. The following day, I'd been working part-time for an unsocial project, bullying kids to try to get them to go to an anti-bullying event. And in the early evening sky was one of those rare wheel rainbows we started to get. A text from my ex-wife. She wants to ask a favour. I'm favourable, so I go to hers. She'd once said that every act of kindness is a crime against inhumanity, and I feel the need to commit one. Walking had been my only option, and what with the dark and the rain and my bad shoes, I now had one wet foot. I watched a thread of cars sew itself into the main road, stitching the night in head and taillights. On the pavement in front of a Georgian terrace, more peeling than painted, was a muzzled sapling. Even the trees had attitudes round here. Scattered on the pavement were the contents of a no-care package. A cigarette packet, empty. A vodka bottle, drunk. A yellow polystyrene chicken takeaway box, mostly empty. A copy of the Daily Express, empty. In the sky hung a moon so large and bright it looked like an advert for moons. She opened the door and before even making eye contact said, did I want to take a road trip? Might another option be to come in first? She nodded and I squeezed my way into her hallway and instantly tripped on a memory of a party here from our time together. Thank you. And that's where that's got to so far. Thank you. I ask for questions, matters arising points, but and this one is called "A butterfly in someone's stomach can cause a hurricane in the heart of another." A reincarnated Dalai Lama asks his 6-year-old sweetheart, "What is the sound of one hand playing patty cake?" A young girl tells her love that she'd only been in placebo relationships before she'd met him, but you're the real drug, baby, she says, and they kiss and are cured. A bird watches a dog as it sleeps in the morning sunbeams, and she wishes she could know him. But dogs and birds can never be together, her mother always told her. Still, she sings twice as prettily to lullaby her lounging love. A couple so in love they divorce over the argument about which loves the other more. A man gives his girlfriend a picture of dogs of many breeds. They are round a card table and are playing Magic the Gathering. He thinks she cries because she loves it. An old man looks to his wife of 60 years and says, when I was young, I nurtured great dreams. I dreamt of travel, of achievement, of knowledge. She smiles. He says, when I met you, I planted those dreams in your heart. They did not grow in the way I expected. She smiles. He says, but in the garden of my life, you have shown me flowers I could never have dreamt of. She smiles. And a leaf falls, twists twice in the sunlight, and then is cherished by the ground. Thank you. So there are a couple of poems. I should say, so, do you do merch here now? Yeah, I'll just mention it. So, this bit, the next bit that I'm going to do now is from Each of Us, which is the show I took to the Edinburgh Fringe in 2013. Got copies you can get there if you want one afterwards. And one of those poems is in there as well. And I've just been touring. I've been doing it, weirdly, in Italy, with supertitles. You know, you get at the opera where it's all translated, all the Italian singing is translated over the stage. So you're partly watching the singers and you're reading, oh yeah, that's what they meant. So that's what it was like for me doing a show in English with an audience of Italians going, oh yeah, this is quite good. So it was quite interesting. So anyway, as I say, this is from each of us, and it was a show that I first did a little... No, I won't catch up, obviously. The preview of At Totally Acoustic in 2010. So, it might be better not to tell you how Radium and I met, but then again, I think it helps. Newton's first law of sarcasm suggests that for every action, there must be an equal and opposite tut. And in my career, I depend on that. I'm a corporate thwart, the most loathed man in a company where colleague contempt is mandatory. My role is to replace industrial espionage. See, all participating firms employ a specific executive to ratchet down their efficiency. To save money on excessively competing with others, everyone instead makes themselves a little bit worse. So, I spend my time sending pointless memos, blocking innovation at every turn, demotivating the workforce. I'm a shirkaholic. My unenthusiasm is infectious. Last Christmas, I instigated the Secret Satan scheme, where a random colleague sends you anonymous grief. I operate to a punishing nap schedule. But this is lunchtime. I spend the morning coming up with a proposal for parking tickets within parking tickets. Theoretically, they're just as stationary as the vehicle, aren't they? And therefore deserve to be penalised. It's a good theory, and I deserve a break. The canteen has its usual air of enforced inertia, and my eye drifts over the meal options. There's M.C. Escher fish, the taste of which turns subtly from fish into duck in your mouth. Very clever, lovely, lovely food. Then there's Mount Rushmore, the new sculpting potato. And then there's the leftovers of last night's launch party for ventriloquism for dummies. Finger food so small as to be virtually crumbs. The race to miniaturise canapes is taken seriously here. Our hands touch as we both go for the same cutlery-scarred tray. Radium has doubtful eyes. Her clothes are scuffed all over as if they are brayed against the surface of her life. Her neck is blotchy, as though she's wearing the map of the ethnic distribution of a troubled region. We both apologise with micro-gestures, offer the tray to the other, and then both go for it again. And this continues for half an hour. Offering the tray to the other, accepting the other's offer, going for the tray, realising the other has also accepted, apologising and recommencing the cycle. Eventually, unfed, we abandon lunch entirely and step outside the main building. Architected by a team of hypothetical arsonists to be the exact sort of place they'd like to burn down one day, it's mainly painted in migraine white, a discomforting tone designed to thwart productivity. But the south face is covered in a genetically altered species of algae, designed to change colour over the course of the day, following the sun. We watch a pair of bees as they approach the wall. It was 20 past mauve. They notice us watching them, and self-consciously they buzz away. Radium sucks on a cig regret, the anti-smoking aid that replaces nicotine with the feeling of tension and doom of a visit to one's family. I suck on an ennui bore, and we both sigh at the mystery and the beauty of a world that has helped us find each other. Love had been the last thing on my mind, but the world being what it is, the last thing on my mind became the first thing in my heart. Radium and I compromise our way into love. Like two people, neither of whom can quite remember the exact rules for a particular card game, but decide to give it a go anyway. There would be arguments, clarifications, there'd be trials and errors, but you're always surprised by how much love you can fit into open lives when you work on it together. Radium said potato, I said tomato. We eventually agreed that words with similar spellings could have different pronunciations. A compromise. Our first date. We're to meet in the bar with two names. Ray enters. Her silk dress is remarkable, and it cleverly combines total provocation with utter surrender. I entertain her with stories that make me seem generous but unlucky. Hers make her seem scholarly yet approachable. We both know how this part of the game goes. And across the other side of the bar that has two names, her future ghost has come back in time after her death to haunt us here at this very moment. And although she's heard all my stories before, here now, and would tell radiums many times over the course of her life, she dimples at the memory. Thank you very much. It's not often in life that somebody from one of your favourite bands ever gets in touch and says, oh, can I do with your gigs? Has that happened to anybody?
No.
Yeah,
no.
Fuck you guys, it happened. And here is the results, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome over to you
knowing the title.
Thank you. So the title is Half Sister. So she's. I got a text from my dad. It's my dad's daughter, kind of. I haven't seen her since we were like six. I got a text last night saying, Chrissy might get in touch. She said she wants to get in touch. And I just thoughtlessly texted back, she said that before, don't expect anything, to my dad. And realised how harsh that sounded. But you never know, she might. Then she'll be like, what the fuck is this song? No, I don't like Steve Earle. No, I don't love anybody. No, I don't have really pale skin. Fuck off. So that'll be the second song it'll be like. I don't know. I'm trying to find things. Anyway, never mind. We'll come to that bridge when we cross it. Okay. Must be 20 years since I last saw you now. Throwing up cherry aid in my fire.
I just heard like this man noise from outside and turned around and there's like a bunch of lads with like a pink frisbee going up. We got this. Some lads shouting slightly, so I grasped them.
It's like
Train
Spotting level violence. I'm looking for
slash bakery.
Using that whole viral thing. That's a guarantee. Okay. We're gonna play two more songs.
One, two, three.
I was young and scared, but I helped you out. I wish that I knew then what I know now. Tell me about a movie you said I'd like. You could see right through me, and you were right.
It's tricky for these guys. They all have to sing a cappella.
Totally acoustic, a right classy evening, like it should have been on Radio 3 or something like that. Thanks very much to Ben, thanks very much to Emma and Co for playing, and to everybody who came and made it such a lovely night, really. And thanks, in fact, to everybody who's played and been to Totally Acoustics, because that was the last one of this series. We are back on July the 2nd at the King and Queen, but that's for a preview of Hey Hey 16K, which is me and Steve's new Fringe show. Totally Acoustic itself will be back hopefully around October, but before then we'll be having the traditional season finale best of, although it's not really a best of, it's more extra material, DVD, whatever it is. What it is extra songs that haven't been on the podcast yet from everybody performed. So thanks very much, it's been a good series this one, beset a little bit by technical problems and also by a conservative victory towards the end, so hopefully we'll have none of that next time. And thanks very much for listening. Hope you'll be listening again when we do come back, and I'll see you then.